This is Find a Way. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Jacob Adams. In this episode, we delve deeper into Jacob's music, his process as a songwriter, and the experience of putting together a band like them, and the power of placing his trust into the musicians he chose to collaborate with. As an added bonus, Jacob has given me permission to include some of the songs from them's EP, Hurts, as they come up in conversation. So keep your ears perked and ready. In the meantime, thank you for finding your way to this episode. I hope it finds you well. Enjoy.
But when I write a song, it's taken my whole life to get me to the point where I'm ready to write that song. And I get to experience it all by myself for the very first time. And that like moment of creation and then experiencing what the outcome of the creation is, I think it feels like that blissy concept you're talking about.
Definitely. I think your theory is sound. I'm totally with you on that. Do you feel your songs carry so much emotion in them? They're so powerful, and they're so the emotion in the song is palpable. I hear it on the recording. I hear it when you play it live. I hear it when I get to play with you. It informs my playing when I play with you. It's one of the things that I loved right off the bat when we got together to play. And I bet you, I can't speak for the other members of the band, but I bet you they felt the same way, which is like, there are a handful of times in my life where I've joined up with a group and the songs made me play different than I would ever play with anyone else. And I love that. That's one of my favorite experiences. I think one of my first experiences with that was with Samantha Jones when I played in Cassette. Mm-hmm. That was a band. If I listened to that band, there's Lola. If I'd listened to that band, you know, without me in it, and if there was 10 bands playing, and Cassette was one of them, and somebody said like, which of those 10 bands are you most likely to join? I would not have picked Cassette probably in the top five. Not to say that I didn't like it. I just would think like, yeah, I don't know if I go with that. You know, I'm not sure if I match. And when Sam asked me to play, I can remember feeling some hesitation and sitting down and playing along with the songs and all of a sudden discovering like, oh, this is like a different piano player that lives in me. This is it was really fun. And so now, like by the time you asked me to play with them, I got to skip the hesitation because I could say like, ooh, I'm going to find a new piano player today. You know, where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. your song, you were talking about how like you use your dark moments, your dark experiences, your pain and things like that. And you use that to transform into song. How does your relationship with the pain or the experience change after you've completed the song?
I would say it's different for every song.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, a song like Blood, mm-hmm. is a song about the dissolution of like a lifelong friendship and you know, the first part of the song is kind of about the closeness and intimacy I had with that person where it really felt like I knew them and they knew me. And, you know, as the friendship progressed and eventually dissolved, there was a lot of pain and there was a lot of feeling like discovering aspects of this person where it didn't feel that I had gotten a genuine experience from them or I had given myself genuinely to the relationship because of how I thought they might perceive me. And then the second half of the song is just sort of about it falling apart and the pain that's inherent in that. And, you know, as someone who I felt close enough that I called them a brother to many people. And then, you know, I don't know, when I started writing that song, it was years ago. It's one of the oldest songs that them plays. But the outcome of it and the writing it, and now like having played it a number of times in a number of ways for a lot of different audiences, and just working on it to practice it myself, as I feel softer about the relationship and that person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we haven't talked in a long time. And I don't know if we ever will, but I would say that it has made me feel more open to that happening at some point.
Yeah.
It's been a way to kind of like feel the feelings a lot. You know, every time I play that song, I feel the feelings. Mm. And I've heard, you know, I've heard myself play it. Now I've listened to myself play the song a lot as I've mixed the record and gotten everything ready to go.
You and me. Shed some blood, bet I cheat, glint and gleam, from all to see. Run these words.
And then the act of pulling the arrangements together with the band that recorded it with me was really like amazing. You know, having everyone bring their own parts and all of the thought and the consideration that people brought to it. And it really, I never felt like I had to translate to the band what my intention was. It just, it seemed to really resonate with people in the right way. And, you know, I didn't have to say like, oh, I don't like this, or, you know, let's change this. Like, everything really flowed together neatly, which happened with that entire set of music.
Seriously. Yeah, I mean, it was magic.
Yeah. 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 It's been really humbling to be around that level of talent and to, you know, I have to kind of like, I don't know if check myself is the right term, but I have like insecurity about my art, like anyone.
Join
right?
the club. Yeah. Yeah.
And seeing the like real earnest and authentic engagement that everybody brought to those sessions and to those rehearsals and to those shows was really humbling. It meant so much to me that everyone was giving so much of their time and so much of their effort and their careful consideration to bring what the music really needed to come alive. And I felt like there was definitely like egos were left at the door. People really engaged with it authentically. And it meant so much to me that these people every one of them who I admire, including you as an artist and as a musician and as a person, you know, to the person in the room, every single one of those people are people who I have admired in my life before. Same. I really got to know them. And then after getting to know them and having them know me and then having them commit to helping me bring that music to the place where it got to, it's really been incredible.
Yeah. The feeling was mutual, you know, and from my perspective, everything you just listed was you're right on. The egos checked at the door, the authentic engagement with creativity, and I love a group that wants to try anything. Mm-hmm. I love a group where, you know, I've played in groups before where I'll say, hey, you know, I think this part might be interesting if we, you know, cut it in half, or if we, you know, slow down here or something like that. And, you know, you just get like, nah, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not a big deal. I mean, okay, if it's not my song, you know, that it's your choice. Okay, that's fine. But it always struck me as odd to have a mentality where, you know, that where you wouldn't even try it.
Yeah.
Where you wouldn't say, sure, let's take 3 minutes mm-hmm. and try this thing out and see what it sounds like. Because the worst thing that can happen is you end up the way you thought in the beginning. Yeah, I don't think so. It doesn't work. And, you know, or I guess the worst thing that could happen is half the band likes it and half the band doesn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, yeah.
But I love an atmosphere where, you know, it's like you said, it's a emotional sandbox. It's mm-hmm. it's a creative sandbox. Let's see what happens if we pile the sand in this shape.
Yeah.
That's fun. Okay.
Yeah. And I think this kind of ties back to the idea of our whole lives bringing us to the moments that become important, right? Like, I've been in many bands over the years, and there have definitely been times where I have absolutely shut someone's idea down.
Oh, yeah.
Same where here. I had the vision, I knew what I wanted, and I didn't even give it a chance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I, in my work, I'm a people leader. And so something that I've learned over the years in doing that kind of work is that I can have a good sense that I'm being successful in my work when people are willing to bring me ideas as a leader.
Right.
And so, you know, I set an intention before we started getting together that I wanted the outcome of getting together with this band to play these songs with them to be that it was music only possible with that group of people.
Mm.
And so I really, you know, it didn't take any monumental effort with the people that were in that room. Right. But I knew that I wanted everybody's input, you know, like I've worked with Chris Hillman and I know he is like, has just such great ideas. And, you know, when he was playing bass in Palimony with us, he brought the, like, most tasteful, just right, appropriate right? Like,
yes,
parts. And the same thing with John David. Like, I've worked with John David in other projects, and I know that they put so much careful thought and consideration into what they bring to a project. And, you know, giving John David the music and the chord charts and having them show up with, you know, arrangements and solos. And it just, it's a rare treasure to get to experience someone who cares that much and is that talented. And, you know, Mark Archer and I have played music together in a lot of projects over the years. And I think we have like a very strong shared musical language.
I'm sure do.
And he's also really talented, of course. And then, you know, I've listened to your music. We got to play in a reunion of Cassette, mm-hmm. which was great. And so I felt immediately like we had that sort of similar shared musical bond.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, really having those people in the room made it easy.
Yeah.
To not feel like I had to be in control to get the kind of music that I wanted to.
I love your intention. Make music that only these people could make. That's because, you know, when you were leading up to it, you know, this little part of my brain thinking that it knew what you were going to say was like, you know, be open to anything or, you know, whatever that is. And your intention includes that, you know, but setting the intention of, I want to know that this is this group, you know, like, that's such a great framework for success, I think. Mm-hmm. And it shows your faith in your choices, you know, the faith in the people you chose to join us, to join you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've totally made the mistake that you're talking about before. You know, my first solo project, Dark Horse, I was determined when I wanted to record the album and I wanted to do it all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a handful of parts here and there that were done by other people. Travis played on a little bit of it and we had some background vocals, but I was so determined to do all the parts, you know, and figure it all out. And part of the reason why I was determined to do it is because it's fun. I love writing a bass part. I love when I write a song, the drums are in my head already, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there's that temptation of, I know what I want because it's there. It's mm-hmm. already in my head. And I think kind of going back to your point earlier about the way that our culture feeds us the story of the way things should be. There's this story. There's this like Brian Wilson legend of like, mm-hmm. you know, he knew all the
six-part harmonies.
Yeah. All the harmonies were already in his head and mm-hmm. everybody just needed to listen to him. Just shut up and do what he says, you know, mm-hmm. and he knows the horns and he knows the,
mm-hmm.
and it's such an attractive, story.
Yeah.
In a way, which is, it's funny. I find myself so often when I realize that I've bought into a fictional narrative about how to be, like on the episode that I'm putting out next week with Connor Mitchell, we talk about how I read, when I was in college, I read this book, Shogun. Have you ever read Shogun?
I didn't, but I did recently watch the TV show.
Beautiful.
It's fantastic.
Right? The book's great too.
Yeah.
And I love that I get to say two as opposed to like, oh, you gotta read the book. But the character Torunaga in the book, you know, was this masterful strategist. And as you know, I mean, mm-hmm. you watch the show. You know, I idolized that. I thought, wow, what a cool way to be is just, you know, being able to subtly make things work the way you want. The word for that is manipulation. The word for that, I mean, that's really, you know, fucked up. Even though, you know, Torunaga is still a great character, that is not the way to lead a life of connection with people and things like that. And so I look back and I think, why was I idolizing that? You know, and I think about this aspect of Brian Wilson. Yeah. So cool that he knew all the parts and everything like that. Also totally, you know, broke down, was not able to, know, like the outcome for him was very lonely. It's very, you know, when you try to be the one, it makes for a very lonely go. And that's what I did with Dark Horse too. I had all the parts written. So then when I assembled my band, I was like, here's your part, you know? And that was such a difficult experience. That was, it tore me up. I mean, it really broke. It was a big swing at that time in my life. My band from, my band in college, when they broke up, that was a big hit to me. And it took me a long time to kind of build up the confidence to say, like, I'm gonna, you know, do this thing. And I finally did it, and I love the album and everything. But yeah, putting together that group and not totally getting that experience that you're talking about, this like total buy-in, you know, there was a lot of like cancellations right before practice, and there was a lot of showing up late for practice. There was a lot of not learning the songs before practice, which, you know, I wasn't paying anybody to be there. I wasn't, you know, like, and everybody had their own things going at the time. But that, coupled with the fact, and it's probably, these probably cannot be separated, actually. They're not coupled. They're like one big movement. Maybe people weren't so buying into it because I was saying, like, here's your part, you know, here, do what I want. And as soon as I let go of a little bit of that control and I let people sort of do their own thing, immediately I thought, shit, I should have waited to record this album. Man, I like that bass part way better than my bass part. Oh, those drums are way cooler than my drums. It was, man, what a shame. Could have been, again, an experience that changed me for the way I needed to be changed. And likely, you know, those people that at the time I felt weren't as dedicated or into it, they were probably given more than maybe I would have given to their projects at the time too. But to get that experience, like what we had with them, that is a moment, I think, that is a perfect example of bliss, where struggle, 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 work, 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 and then reward. When you mentioned John David coming in with the charts and things like that, the other thing that I really loved was it's the dynamic of the band sort of made it so the default for solos was sort of like, is it going to be Mark? Is it going to be Colin? You know, like that was kind of the back and forth. And Mark and I both sort of had this demeanor of like, do you want to do it? You want me to do it? You want to, you want to share? You want to, like, you know, and I am always hesitant to say, unless I have something, you know, for, I'm going to forget the name of the song. I have a part, you know, that I remember writing immediately when I was practicing one of the songs. Maybe you'll remember. Dun, 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 dun. I'll do it right here.
Bridges.
What's that?
Bridges.
Bridges.
Yeah.
So I lay down the bridge at your feet. Another bridge that you'll refuse to cross for me. Pull the gas, strike a match, cross your teeth. Burn it down with words and apathy. Burning bridges ain't nothing to me. I swear rivers I can barely see. bleed. I know we could never ever let it be. Fill the cup, drink it down quick. Nothing's solved again and nothing's ever.
Bridges.
Yeah.
That was the only one where I said, okay, I want yes. this, you know, I want, mm-hmm. and when, but that was way later in the time that we were working. John David came in and immediately said, there's one song and I want the solo right here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was perfect. It was exactly what needed to be there. Was that blood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew that was coming. John David and I and some other people had done performances as them. We did a performance at Riverine Reunion,
mm-hmm.
And it was an electric version, and it was all different songs from what we recorded with the exception of Blood.
Mm-hmm.
And John David brought that solo to Blood to one of the rehearsals, and I just loved it. And
yeah.
so it was, you know, very much the same one that they brought to our sessions. And it's just so good. And I loved how Chris was like so quick to give it the right drum beat and sort of pick that up. And it adds like so much to that song. It builds on like the character of the song in such a really effective way. Like I can't imagine it being done in any other way.
Yeah.
You know?
Agreed. When we played it as a trio with Mark, I had a moment where I thought, oh, maybe I should try to fill in that solo part. You know, I'll do something on the piano at low end. And I immediately thought, I can't do it. It's unmatchable. It's
yeah. I mean, I could hum that bass solo.
Yes.
Right now.
I've got it in my head.
Locked in my brain. It's so good.
Yeah. I mean, especially with the upright, really nailed it too, because that fretless sound is just
yeah
that might be my favorite moment on the EP actually is that solo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's saying a lot, because Mark Archer is a freaking beast.
He is.
Oh my god,
yeah, there's some really strong, I mean, from everyone, but
seriously,
yeah
yeah. Well, and there you have, though, you have this moment in time that you've successfully captured. You know, we had a good performance, had a good session recording, and those songs, over and over again, those songs would form themselves, and I would have the experience of feeling as though it was done.
Mm-hmm.
Which is such, in my experience, that happens every once in a while. It rarely happens over and over again,
mm-hmm.
where you get done and say, that is how the song is supposed to exist.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that has to do with how much space you left in the song.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow it doesn't sound empty when you play by yourself, though. Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I realize now that I'm sort of, you know, showering you right now.
No, I love it. Being showered is one of my favorite things.
Good. Well, then in that case,
I live for the attaboy. I'm trying to not to do that less in my life.
Sure.
But it does. Yeah. Oof.
Are you good at attaboying yourself?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Not really. No. I feel confident with the self attaboy on this record.
Good.
Like it just, you know, that's what I wanted it to be. And we recorded it the way I wanted to record it. And everybody just went with it, even though it was kind of unconventional. Sure. And it came out the way that I wanted it to come out. And so, good job to me.
So kind of connecting back to the connection we have with our emotions and the songs that we pour our emotions into, you said with Blood that you still have, you're not necessarily resolved in your struggle there. It's just, okay, I'm about to get ahead of myself. Do you feel some musicians, me included, not all the time, but sometimes, do you feel as though there is a exchange that happens when you write a song about an emotion? For example, I have a song that I wrote about similar topic. Yeah. A dying friendship. And I poured that into a song and it kind of lives there now. I even find myself more forgiving and more, I should say, less upset, less, you know, I don't know. It feels like a burden has been lifted. The song, however, it's there. It's in the song.
Yeah.
And it's mean sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of similar or?
Yeah, I think so. I think, some of the songs like are about specific difficult times.
Yes.
Sometimes the song is just about a hard week when, you know, a hard week in Shannon and I's relationship where I've had hard feelings and I didn't write it into a song then, right? I didn't write that song while I was angry or while we were fighting or whatever was happening, but I wrote about it later. And sometimes like I like get nervous and feel embarrassed if like Shannon's gonna hear it.
Yes.
Or you know, I'm like, this is not how I feel now. Right? Like I'm past this, we're past that. And but it is like an accurate capture of what was happening to me at that time. And so I feel it when the song happens, but it also, and it feels good to have it like, you know, I don't know if I want to call it immortalized, but it's stuck there in that song.
Yeah.
And I think that it's good for it to be there and not inside of me. And I get to relive it a little bit and remember what it was like when I play the song. But then I can, you know, I go past it. I don't have to like linger.
Do you ever use your songs to purposely go back?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think that definitely happens. There's like plenty of songs or songs I've written that I don't like to play anymore.
Yeah. Same. Yeah, I have some fear over playing certain songs for a crowd. Not because, I mean, there are songs that I worry are going to offend somebody, or if the person's in the crowd that I wrote it about, I'm afraid that they're going to get upset. There is also songs I'm afraid to play because I'm afraid it's going to make me cry, you know. Yeah. And I'm going to, I wrote a song after my dog Took died. And Took's death was just devastating to me. It was like one of the hardest things I've ever gone through. I've had a few people sort of chuckle at that, you know, like, well, we've had it easy. And I always want to be like, I don't think you get it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was just tough. But last year, or this year, I guess. Yeah, it was this year. His the anniversary of his death came around, and I usually do, you know, we usually do something. It's not his birthday, but like the day I associate with getting him.
Yeah.
I usually wake up before sunrise and I'll have a little fire outside, and that's, and he's buried in the backyard. So I'll have like a little fire and sit with him and talk to him. And on the anniversary of his death, I usually do a fire at night, and during the day I'll play the song and I'll, you know, just try to remember the day and things like that. And I'm a little bothered at how distant I feel from it now. You know, when the first year or so, I would cry almost every day, you know, a little bit, if not multiple times. And I would stand out by his grave every morning and every night and talk to him. And now it's like on those anniversaries, I go out and like in between, you know, every once in a while, if I'm out there, I'll say, "Hey, Tuck, you know, hey, buddy." but this year, I remember I played piano on the day of his, you know, the anniversary of his death, but I didn't play the song. And I don't know why. I don't think I meant to not play it. I just didn't play it. And I did the fire, and it was a nice fire, and I talked to him, and I had a nice talk. Mm. I didn't cry, and I didn't have my emotional outlet that day. And the next day, I thought, like, man, why didn't I do that? And the next day came around, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go play now. You know, there are no rules on this. I'm going to go play.
Yeah.
I sat down and started playing, and the floodgates opened. I was just bawling. I couldn't even sing the rest of the song. It was trapped in there. It was like thank God I played.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, and it was one of those cries that like sort of ended with laughing, you know, sort of that like relief. And what a gift, you know, what a curse and a gift, I guess. I don't know. But to know that that's the place I can go, and to have to struggle with the fear of being vulnerable like that in front of other people, it also feels a little weird. It almost feels too private just to play for others. I don't know. There's something about... I get past that real quick because I think I like to be vulnerable with other people. This is what this song is. I want to share it. I want to share the spirit of it. But there's something about getting paid to do that that throws me off sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I think like, I worry that there's an indication of something like, yeah, I'm going to cry and aren't I great? You know, that I cried when I played this song.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I see it as one of the most valuable aspects of my life.
Yeah. I mean, bringing, you know, if the authentic performance brings that out in you.
Yeah.
That is the most you can give.
Right.
And, you know, I've been finishing all my sets with the song I Know. And that song is like.
Yeah.
Like, if I, you know. When I get into like the flow state playing it, I am crying or in tears or, you know, feeling really emotional at the end of it.
I know the exact part in your voice, the inflection in your voice that I hear. Yeah. Yes.
And so I like to end the show with it because I don't know what else I have left at the end of that song.
Yeah. You know? I really appreciate that about you. Aside from the fact that you're incredibly talented, you know, it's funny because them showcases your songwriting and you're playing rhythm guitar. You're not doing lead parts. You're not. My introduction to you as a musician was with Palamoni. Mm-hmm. You know, your electric and your pedals and like all the sounds that you were making up there and the precision that you had and it was just like you were. Is it Johnny Greenwood in Radiohead? Is that his name? Yeah, sort of like that, where it's like you can't, this feeling, this fairy dust that's being sprinkled over everything, like you just can't take it out of it, you know. And so to have that introduction to you, and yet to have our most intimate musical collaboration be where none of that is a part of it, and instead you're still sprinkling on that fairy dust and it's still like permeating the whole room. It's really commendable. It's my favorite kind of songwriter musician by far. I will take that over like a Steve Vai, you know, like any, I mean, 100 times over.
Yeah.
Somebody who just has the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel that way about Michael Now. Do you know Michael Now?
No.
He had a band called Cotton Jones. It was originally called Cotton Jones Basket Ride, but he's done a ton of like solo work, and he's a singer songwriter, and he, like, I love his songwriting. I love his voice, and it's really like, it's straight ahead music. In the early records, you can hear there's like a lot of production, a lot more like ambient sound, but he's able to like do both.
Yeah.
And I've always really admired him as an artist. So I appreciate that feedback.
Yeah, sure. Emotion, I think, is the thing that counts most.
Mm-hmm.
That's the conversation I keep finding myself having with people on and off the podcast, is that I'm so tired of hearing people say, well, I'm not a musician, or I'm not a singer, or
yeah,
whatever. And I think there are probably plenty of people who don't have emotional connection to music or art and things like that. And without trying to sound superior or anything like that, that is a thing that I can't help but pity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I hear that, and it's just like, I'm sure they might look at me and pity all the time and work I've put into something that's paid me so little monetarily back.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for me, I hear that and I think, I don't know, it just seems like going through life with your eyes closed or something, or I don't know, your senses closed.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Music's always like, and art have always like connected with me. I grew up with a lot of music in the house. My dad is a painter, and so I've always been around art, and he's always had good art at the house, in addition to his own art, which is very good.
Hmm.
So yeah, I grew up having like emotional connections, and when I got old enough to pick out art, I was able to pick out, you know, my family helped me pick out, you know, posters of whatever, and I put Dolly in my room. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, being close enough for my parents to take me to Tampa to see the Dolly Museum as a kid just like blew my mind.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I love having that connection to art and music.
All right, so what's the next experience you've got lined up for yourself?
TBD.
Yeah, great answer. Great answer.
Yeah. I, you know,
that's a tricky question.
Yeah. I feel a lot of relief getting the Them record out and done.
Yes.
You know, I'm experiencing that time where you kind of like, you get it down and then you are kind of ready to be done with it for a little while, because it just takes up so much of your bandwidth.
Yes.
So I'm letting that happen. I've got a show booked, a solo performance as Them with Laura Gibson at the Links.
Oh, right.
In January. And I've been listening to Laura Gibson's music for like 20 years.
Wow.
I really love it. Yeah. And it's going to be such an honor to get to share a bill with her. And it's just me opening for her. So that's going to be a wild experience.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
To note, or at least to add though, not only did you, when it comes to the EP, not only did you finish recording the EP and mastering it, you put it on a ton of cassette tapes, which you hand labeled and, mm-hmm, you know, did cover art for. You made stickers, you made t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the amount that you got done in that short amount of time was very impressive. So Where can we hear it?
Everywhere.
Okay.
It's on all the streaming platforms.
I mean, I knew the answer.
Yeah, of course. Like, of course. it's on Bandcamp if you wish to buy it. It's digital download. I'm going to list eventually the cassette tapes and the t-shirts and stuff. In the meantime, if you see me around town, just let me know and I will connect you with those things. But yeah, it's everywhere. It's cool. Easy to find. It's cool to have another piece of music out there in that way, because I haven't released anything like that since the Palimony EP in 2019.
Right.
So it's been quite a while. We're almost done with the full Palimony record.
I was just going to ask. Yeah. What's the...
I mean, as far, you know, there's minor things. Jordan Burchell has been mixing it, and it's a monumental effort on his part. The work that's gone into it has been massive and time consuming, and he's really done everything possible to make it as good as it can be, and I feel like it's there. And so at this point, we're just kind of, you know, waiting for the right moment to do it. We're tentatively talking about trying to get people together and maybe putting a show together.
That would be great.
I don't know. We'll see. I would love it. I would love it. I would love it. Lexi and I have talked about it a little bit. I think it would just be a matter of getting the right people together in the room. It would be great to send a Palimony off, right?
You were one of the bands that I missed the most.
I loved being in that band.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Of course.
Because anywhere from 6 to 7 adults with real lives, totally, figuring out time to get together is a challenge. But it was definitely some of the most rewarding music making.
It's a bit of an ironic situation to have a band called Palimony who has now broken up and is trying to get back together to do something, you know, like dealing terms and
yeah. I mean, you know, Palimony came into existence at the end of Endless Pools, and which I guess turned out not to be endless. And friend breakups and things like that that happened in the aftermath of that. And when I came across the word Palimony, I felt like it fit what was next.
Oh, it's perfect.
And
it's a great name.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was wonderful. Everyone we worked with was great. I still, you know, I'm in touch with the people from that band. Obviously a lot of them are lifelong friends, and it would be wonderful to get together and play again.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
And as far as band names go, you're 2 for 2 with some of my favorite band names. I mean, them and Palimony are, and I don't know what other band names you've come up with, but
good. Yeah, ones. Thank you. Endless Pools is the only other one that I came up with.
Also good.
I stole it from the commercials that used to air on NPR for like the pool you put in your house that you can just like swim in,
and
it creates like an endless flow of water you swim against. It's kind of like a pool treadmill.
That's cool.
But I just had the image in my head of like, pool that never ended. I don't know. Yeah, it was fun. That was a fun one too.
Well, okay, so before we wrap things up here, I'd love to know how you're gonna treat yourself today, since I mean it's Friday. And
So in our neighborhood, there's a dog park, and on Friday afternoons around 5, it's an impromptu, unofficial happy hour for dogs. And
really?
People meet at the park and bring a beer or whatever. I don't know if we're allowed to have beers in the park, but so that's my plan.
Cool.
So finish this up, have some lunch, get Stevie, my little puppy, and we will walk from my house to the park. It's about a mile, and we'll hang out, and I'll watch Stevie have the time of her life playing with other little puppies. And I don't know what the rest of it holds. I think I might get a tattoo tomorrow.
It's like
a good season for Flash right now.
Yeah.
Fest is in town, so everybody has really cool Flash seats. So I might pick up another new tattoo.
You just got one the other day. You got the possum, right?
The possum. I love this possum.
Love it.
Yeah. I love it.
I love your plan. Good. Mm-hmm. That's a great, good way to treat yourself.
Yeah.
You want to go get some lunch?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Jacob, for sharing your time and your wisdom with us. I value these things beyond measure. Thank you, listeners, for finding your way to our conversation today. Your continued support means the world to me. And to show my gratitude, I leave you with yet another song from Vim's EP to close out the episode. This one is called Tiny Bones, which leaves only the title track, Hurts, for you to seek out on your own if you wish to complete the entire EP. And lucky for you, it's easy. Just open up your favorite streaming platform and you'll find it there. In the meantime, I wish you well, and I look forward to our next meeting. Thanks.
Me in a world.